Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, we've been looking at the polls as we get closer and closer to the heat of the general campaign season. And one of the races that Republicans had an outside hope of picking up was New Hampshire and the seat held by Jeanne Shaheen. But it looked like, even with Scott Brown in the race, that that might be a hill too high to climb. Not the case anymore, according to a new survey from the University of New Hampshire Survey Center for WMUR. They've got it Shaheen 46, Brown 44, inside the margin of error. Basically a toss-up at this point. So if the Democrats thought they're already playing a lot of defense, they got one more.
What's most surprising about this is that it took this long. We probably shouldn't be too surprised by this. And then, look, we all know, whatever you think of Scott Brown and whether he was sufficiently conservative, pretty good candidate, managed to pull off that upset in the special election in 2010. He got swamped by a heavily Democratic electorate in Massachusetts in the 2012 election cycle, in more friendly environs in New Hampshire, and was going to have to deal with the issue of the potential of him being a carpetbagger. My understanding is, particularly my communiques from the Scott Brown campaign, is that this guy is doing a ton of retail politicking up there. It's worth noting the last poll in this race that had him down by double digits was like a month ago. And look, you know, circumstances change. We shouldn't chalk this one up as a definite Scott Brown win at this point, but it's now looking more like what we would expect in New Hampshire, kind of a purple state, a lot of independents up there, and Jeanne Shaheen not exactly being a whirling dervish of raw political charisma. Now, does this mean he's going to win? No, but it's now on the map. Hopefully we'll get one or two polls to kind of confirm this. But, you know, when you see a name like Scott Brown getting in the high 30s and low 40s in most polls, that really seems a little surprising and unusual. And what happened, it appears to be, is Republican-leaning independents are coming home, warming up to him. He's been beating the drum on the unsecure border for the past month, and it looks like it's having an impact here. So, again, we'll see what happens. But, again, I think you characterize it well. This is now one that the Democrats can no longer take for granted.
And the same polls suggest that whether it's the Scott Brown campaign tactics on the immigration, just the fact that people are getting to know him, the numbers for Shaheen are definitely going down, not just whether or not people will vote for her, but now 48% view her favorably, down from 57% last month. Her unfavorables up to 36 from 29% back in July. Folks still pretty much split on Scott Brown. So definitely those numbers headed in the right direction. But very interesting. All right, on to the bad news. And obviously, ISIS is one of the major pieces of bad news this week, although it certainly hasn't been alone. Yesterday, in his usual unmistakable style, Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel kind of ummed and awed his way to pointing out that ISIS does, in fact, represent perhaps the greatest threat to the United States right now, which is certainly very different position than the president held earlier this year when he called them the JV version of al-Qaeda. And apparently, Chuck Hagel's impressions on ISIS did not make it all the way over to the State Department, because here is Marie Harf's exchange with a reporter asking about the situation with ISIS and ISIS essentially declaring war on America.
They are announcing ISIS people in their message, whatever their recorded messages, other messages, that now we are in a war with America.
This is not about ISIL versus the United States. I think I made that clear yesterday. They are killing anyone who gets in their way. Sunni, Shia Muslims, Christians, Yazidis, Iraqis, Syrians, anyone who gets in their way, and now an American. So this is not about what the United States is or isn't doing.
They are announcing that it's a war against America. Right or wrong, that's what they are saying.
Well, they can say whatever they'd like, but what I am making clear is that's not what ISIL represents. And they don't represent any religion. They are at war with everybody they come into contact with.
Jim, I think we know where the JV team is.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating because we've seen this occasionally at the White House press briefings. They have a message of the day, and they're not going to get deterred from that message of the day, regardless of what the actual question posed to them is. If the State Department wants to emphasize that ISIS does not represent Islam, that they are attacking other Muslims, in an attempt to encourage any Muslims on the fence to say, hey, look, these guys are the bad guys, and even though we're a different religion, or most of us here in America are a different religion, we're the good guys here, and you should be helping us out. Hey, fine, that's a great message to have. ISIS has, as you said, they've declared war on the United States, and whether or not we want to think of ourselves at war with them, they're at war with us. At some point, it kind of gets into this semantic game here. And I realize it's the State Department. It's a building full of diplomats. They all want to be nice. They all want to be, proper protocol. But I just really want to hear a spokesman say, yeah, they killed one of ours, so we're going to kill a whole bunch of theirs. We need to send the signal, you do not attempt to kill Americans. We're doing helping out the Yazidis and all these other groups because we like to, because it's the right thing to do. We're defending Americans because we need to, right? This is what the entire purpose of government is, to protect the people, to protect the rights of the people. And you can't imagine much worse than ISIS right now. So it's not the worst. A State Department spokesperson getting tangled up in their words and being incapable of kind of acknowledging that, yes, the U.S. is now at war with ISIS. Not the worst thing in the world, but kind of like, if you wonder what it's going to take to get everybody to wake up to the point where we don't really need to worry about the diplomatic niceties. And we can say, no, these guys are evil and we're coming to get them. Unless, of course, we're not actually coming to get them. And these recent airstrikes are meant to be kind of a, check the box show of force than an actual, use of force.
Yeah, it also makes a difference when you have people who are well-versed in the affairs of the world. I know Jen Psaki was a campaign official. I'm not sure where Marie Harf came from, but I get the sense that this was not her initial role with the Obama team.
Yeah, there's a certain spin that just doesn't work when it's matters of life and death, and it comes across as just amateur hour. JV team, you might even say.
Yes. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And, of course, the other issue that's got a lot of Americans concerned, and rightly so, is what's been playing out in Ferguson, Missouri for nearly 2 weeks, although the last couple of nights seem to have gone quite a bit better. The National Guard's been pulled out, and hopefully things are on their way back to normalcy, and we'll see a fair and thorough investigation of what happened and let the process proceed. The president's comments to date, for the most part, have been deemed to be better than his comments in previous racial incidences during his presidency. There was a little more debate over the things that Eric Holder's had to say over the past couple of days. But here's the crazy martini, actually, for today. This is from Politico magazine. Apparently, the Obama administration point person on the ground is Al Sharpton. Al Sharpton has established himself as a de facto contact and conduit for a jittery White House seeking to negotiate a middle ground between meddling and disengagement. There's a trust factor with the rev from the Oval Office on down, a White House official familiar with their dealings told me. He gets it, and he's got credibility in the community that nobody else has got. There's really no one else out there who does what he does, unquote. And the White House, as the crisis following Brown's death seemed to flare out of control, worked extensively behind the scenes to maximize the rev's doing what he does, using him as both a source of information and a go-between. So it goes on to say that basically Valerie Jarrett was getting most of her information to pass along to the president from Al Sharpton. Jim?
There are a lot of things that are fascinating about that little excerpt you read there. Among them, nobody does what he does, including inspire arson. I suppose it's possible that in the African-American community, no one quite has the credibility of Al Sharpton. I'm sure there are a lot of people who would dismiss my assessment as just another white guy not understanding. But I'd kind of like to say to the black community, really? Is this the guy you want as your spokesman and as your representative and the person who is your conduit to the White House? There's nobody else. I'm not saying you got to do Alan West. I'm not saying you have to have a diehard conservative. Really? And then the second kind of aspect of that is that, maybe he has unparalleled credibility in the African-American community. He may also have unparalleled lack of credibility in the non-African-American community. There are still people who remember Tawana Brawley. There are still people, John Podoris was complaining that this Politico piece really didn't mention, I believe, Stephen Pagones, another one of Sharpton's scandals of the past. I guess part of the thing is that if you grew up in and around New York City in the 1980s, you remember Al Sharpton being the guy who went into every tense situation and found a way to make it worse. And that he was the opposite of a healer, that he was the opposite of somebody who could make things better. And in the case of Freddie's Fashion Mart and the arson that occurred there, a guy who put metaphorical gasoline on the fire, which later led to literal gasoline upon the fire. And the idea that he's the White House's point person on race, the entire talk of Obama being this postpartisan healer and this guy who was going to improve race, I think this is where we are. At least the African-American figure in American politics who may have been most divisive, may have been most incendiary, no pun intended, most likely to exacerbate tensions between blacks and whites has now become the White House's point person on race relations. Just kind of mind-boggling and inappropriately crazy martini to end the week on, Greg.
Yeah, sobering as well. So hopefully we get better news next week. But we've been saying that pretty much every Friday this summer, Jim, and it just doesn't seem to work. But we keep hoping.
It's a bumper crop of crazy this year.
That's certainly the case. Have a great weekend.
See you next week, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please be sure to join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.